Produced at CFIS-FM in Prince George, Health First is available across Canada through the National Campus and Community Radio Association.
We are back with Anita Johnson, and we've been talking about eating disorders and what the foods that we're eating actually have to tell us those certain cravings. So you said, Anita, that this could almost be fun, like to look at what we're doing and why. How do you bring the curiosity and fun into figuring out this puzzle?
Well, the curiosity is there already because people are going, why am I doing what I'm doing with food? Why can't I stop eating this? Or why am I always... And the problem is that they're asking the right questions, but they're asking it with judgment instead of curiosity. So it begins with understanding that there's meaning, often profound, deep meaning, in whatever your struggle happens to be with eating and food. But that meaning is hidden. And so in order to access it, you do have to summon as much curiosity as you can to find out, okay, what is this about? Rather than going, why am I doing this? Which is hard, that in and of itself. But when you can do that, what happens is when you get what the food metaphorically is trying to tell you, it's sort of like the lights come on. And I don't quite know how to explain it, but it's like enlightenment is not just in terms of illumination, but also in terms of levity. You lighten up. So, and it's funny, and it's kind of hard to describe how it's funny, but when you get it, it's sort of like, oh my gosh, I got it. Who would have thought? Sometimes it's in the language of the food itself. So I was working with this woman. She was an emergency room physician, and she struggled with compulsive eating. And one day she came into my office, and she was really upset with herself. She was going, oh my gosh, I'm so disgusted. I can't believe what I did. So right there was the judgment. The judgment was getting in the way of her curiosity. So I had to bring in more curiosity and ask her, wait, what happened? She goes, well, I was working in the ER, came home, fixed my husband and I some chicken tenders for dinner, and before he got home, I ate them all myself. I can't believe I did. I'm so disgusting. And I have to stop her there because I'm trying to get the curiosity, not the judgment. And I'll go, wait a minute. So you were working a 12 to 14-hour shift in the emergency room, right? She said, yeah. I said, tending to all kinds of physical and emotional trauma, right? She goes, yes. And so I said, well, we had worked together for quite a while, so I said, what do you think you were really hungry for? And she said, a hug. And I said, yeah, you were wanting some TLC, some tender, loving care, and instead you ate the chicken tenders. Now, because this was spot on, she laughed, I laughed, because it brought it into consciousness. So sometimes it's just the languaging around the food itself. Now, she will never be able to eat chicken tenders again when she's not hungry. Because if you're hungry, chicken tenders are just chicken tenders if you're physically hungry. But it's when you're not hungry, she will have to check in with herself to see if she needs a hug. And that's how it works.
So there's a new line of communication, self-communication, asking yourself, how am I feeling? What am I needing? What do I really need?
Yeah. So the first thing, of course, you rule out physical hunger. You check in to try to find hunger and hunger signal or something, a sensation in your body. But then when you're reaching for the pizza, you check in, not a hunger signal in sight, the question to ask yourself is this: what is the feeling I'm trying not to feel? Because you see, we don't eat for emotional reasons. We eat because we don't want to feel our emotions because they're too painful or uncomfortable or scary or overwhelming or whatever. So if you can, with curiosity, say, okay, I wonder what the feeling is I'm trying not to feel. And then you do a whole scan of your day. It's like, oh, maybe I'm still ticked off at the jerk who cut me off on the freeway, or maybe I'm worried about this upcoming parent-teacher meeting, or maybe I'm annoyed at something my husband said, or I'm concerned about something my boss did. You scan your day. But I have to tell you, more often than not, the answer is going to be, I don't know, I feel fine. Oh. Because it's unconscious, right?
Right.
And so that's when you turn to the food and you look at the food and you say, okay, how would I describe this food to an extraterrestrial who'd never seen it or had it before? And then notice the words you use to describe it, because that is where the key lies to those other hungers.
And it generally presents itself as an emotional way of speaking about it?
Well, typically it's a hunger. It's another kind of hunger. Maybe, you know, you're hungry for comfort or being soothed, or maybe you need emotional expression of your frustrations or your angers. It will reveal itself to you. For example, if you're going, ooh, I just want crunchy, salty chips, and if I speak about the sensation of biting, it's like needing to bite into something, and just paying attention to, you know, what that food is telling you. Sometimes it can be in the way in which you eat it. Sometimes it's in the words of the food itself. But there are clues there. You have to put on your detective cap now.
Mm-hmm.
And a good detective is always willing to look into the garbage, right? It's like,
right,
you can't go in there with judgment and making assumptions that all this means is that there's something wrong with you and that you have no willpower or you're being stupid. You go in with that judgment, and I mean, it's just like with a kid. If you say to a kid, why'd you do that? You're not going to get an honest answer, right? They're going to tell you whatever they think you want to hear. But if you ask that very same question with curiosity, huh, how come you did that? The
mm-hmm.
answer you get could amaze you. And so it is with our communication with ourselves. By pretending, so when I say it's a little playful, you pretend like you're describing that food to someone who's never, ever seen it. Or you're trying to get somebody else hooked on that food, and you're going to sell that food and tell them what's so fabulous about it. Because that's not what we do. Normally, we just start beating ourselves up and telling us how that food is so bad for you, and why did you eat it? You know, you're not supposed to be eating, you know, high fat or sugar or blah, 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 blah. And that's not going to get you anywhere.
Right.
Because it's not going to get you to the meaning, the deeper meaning of how come you're doing whatever it is you're doing with food.
Tell us a little bit about the Light of the Moon Cafe and how it works.
Oh, okay. So it's an online, it's a combination, I would say, a book club for Eating in the Light of the Moon or a workbook. It's interactive, though. So we have a forum. So it runs like a class. Everyone signs up at the same time, and then we go for 8 weeks. And there are activities every single day, not necessarily totally time-consuming. It might be listening to a story that I tell or a metaphor or maybe reading chapter 7 in Eating in Light of the Moon. And then we have a forum, and everyone hops on the forum and shares their thoughts or their feelings or their questions, and I respond to all the comments on the forum. So it's really pretty cool because we have women from all over the world and are sharing, even though they may be different struggles, some sort of struggle with eating and their body. And it's pretty amazing. I wasn't so sure it could work. I didn't think you could have a woman's group online that could go so deep. And what I've discovered is people go sometimes deeper, even faster, because it's pretty safe. You're with other people that understand totally what you're talking about. And there's only one rule in the forum for the participants, which is only support, no advice. Except for me.
Good. Yeah, I think you deserve that after all that. So do we ever truly recover, or it's an ongoing process for life to continue being curious? Do you see people just relax about food all the way around?
Oh, yeah. I've been working in this field for 35 years. I know of thousands of individuals who have totally, completely recovered, period, not just white-knuckling it, but actually living their lives without stressing about eating and food, totally, be free. I know it exists because, I get emails from around the world. I have my own clients. I have family members, friends, colleagues that have totally, completely recovered. It is absolutely possible, even if you have a severe eating disorder, even if you struggled your whole life. I know those people.
Mm-hmm.
And so it is absolutely possible. However, it's like a weed. If you just chop it off at the top and just try to get rid of the symptoms and don't find out what this is all about in the first place, then given the right circumstances, it's going to come back, right? Mm-hmm. But if you go down and clear those roots, it's a done deal.
Yeah. Fascinating. It's so curious, and it's so fascinating to think of food in these ways, and to hear your stories, and to use the metaphors around how food works, how we work. And so I just wanted to thank you for all the work that you've done, and introduce anybody in Canada who hasn't heard or seen of your work to this very important work that you do.
Thank you. Well, I have a quiz, if people go to lightofthemooncafe.com, where you can respond to all the different foods that maybe you might want to eat when you're not hungry, or not let yourself eat when you are hungry, and find out. It's a way of finding out, oh, what could this mean metaphorically, so people will know where to start looking.
Great, great. Well, thank you so much for being on the show today, Anita, and thank you for all your work.
Thank you so much, Kathy.
Okay, it was a pleasure. Bye-bye. We're going to go to a quick break, and when we come back, we're going to talk to Dr. Sanan Hafiz.